Thanks for tuning in to the Next Level Church podcast. For more information, check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
Will you guys help me welcome my wife, Monica Shepherd?
Good morning.
And this should be fun. We've never done this before. I've done many Q&As, but we've never done one together.
Yeah, I'm excited. Thanks for letting me come up here.
Yeah. Let's see. Do we have any? Hopefully, you guys have been texting away some questions. If not, we can stall. You know any dance routines?
No, I have a brace on my leg. I wouldn't be very good at that.
Fair enough.
A two-step?
Yeah, I don't even know that one. It's against my religion to dance. Oh, we got a question. Okay. How can we as a church help you two as a married couple? Excuse me. How can we as a church help you two as a married couple? I got an answer. Do you want to go first? Do you have anything?
I mean, initially, I think the church continually helps us and always has. I think that we are often asked how people can pray for us. I think that's a huge thing, just to pray in general for our marriage and our children. I think that by showing up and serving and giving, not to support us, but the church and the vision and the mission is huge. I mean, it's a general answer, but that's really it. And I think as a pastor's wife, I've always felt supported as people have supported Rob as the pastor.
Yeah. Yeah, I think our church, for the most part, does a good job. I think that a way to continue to support us is to understand that pastor is a full-time job, but there is also some boundaries, and that there is family time, and there's some things that need to happen, and we can't be everywhere. And most of the time, most people are very gracious with that, but every once in a while where I feel pressure is I don't like saying no to people. And so when people understand that if I say no, it's not because I don't want to do it, it's because I'm trying to also juggle family time and guard that. And so when we have grace on that end, it helps us out a ton, at least helps me out a lot. All right. Feel free to get in there and get questions, literally anything. We are open book. So if you want to know specifics about fighting or you want to know about...
Now's your chance, because I'm way more open than he is.
That's true. When do you recommend starting premarital counseling? Please describe the process. That's great. I highly recommend premarital counseling. I don't quite understand why, and I deal with this all the time, I don't understand why any couple would be resistant to premarital counseling. In order for me to marry anyone, I require 4 sessions of premarital counseling. And if they won't agree to that, then I say, I'm sorry, I won't be able to marry you. And the reason that I think it's so important is, just stick with me for a second. Before you drive a car, you take a class and you hopefully study and then you take a test. We don't just throw you into the car and just say drive. But yet for some reason, when people get married, they're like, yeah, I don't want to read a book. I don't want to have any counseling. I just want to jump in this thing. And like, it, to me, to jump into marriage without premarital counseling is more scary than giving a 16-year-old a license who has never taken behind the wheel. Marriage is really, really tough, and I think we need all the help that we can get. And so I don't know, if I'm doing the premarital counseling, I do 4 sessions, and so we typically start 4 months before the wedding. If you're doing this with another pastor somewhere else, I would ask them what their standard is, but for me typically it's 4 months before the wedding, and we do sessions leading up to that, and we cover all sorts of things in premarital counseling. We cover how to fight, we cover sex, we cover finances, all sorts of good stuff.
Books to read,
yeah, books to read, yeah, we require a couple books to read.
We're celebrating 23 years of marriage this summer, and we still refer to our We still refer back to our premarital counseling, the books we read and things that we learned, and then improve upon that as he does premarital counseling now. And it is startling that people just say, no, we'll find someone else to do it. We don't want that. Like, it's shocking how many say no. Like, okay. Yeah. Or won't read a book before they have a kid either. That's always surprising. Mm. Or ask advice, not necessarily from us, but from anyone.
Yeah.
Also terrifying.
Yeah. Good luck with that. All right, let's see. We got any more in here?
All right, you ready for the next one?
Okay. Oh, okay. Concerning covering our heads during worship, both my wife and I felt convicted because always wearing a hat during church, and my wife never wears a hat. These verses say that I shouldn't and she should. Could you speak more into this matter? Should I be feeling convicted and therefore take my hat off during service? So to onboard anyone that may be new to the church or not understand what that reference is, Paul gives some specifics for worship. And one of the things that makes the Bible really, really tricky is that a lot of people want to read the Bible simply black and white and don't want to ask any questions. And what makes it tricky is that sometimes the Bible is black and white. Like, thou shalt not murder, there's no gray in that. You're not like, what do you really mean by that? Like, thou shalt not steal, that's pretty black and white. Like, and so then you get into specifics like worship, and there are people who will just read it black and white and say, oh, well, this also is on the same level as those other commands. But what we know when we study the language is that there were some cultural things that were going on. There were things that were appropriate in their day and age that today we would say, okay, that is no longer it's no longer an issue for us. I would say that, that it is okay if you have a different conviction, but if your wife has that conviction, we talked about this in the series, I think this is an opportunity to submit to her. Even if you don't have a conviction to wear a hat, if she does, then you say, okay, for the good of our marriage, I cannot wear a hat in church. It shouldn't be that big of a deal. But for me personally, I wear a hat almost every single Sunday. And so I don't have that conviction at all. I don't think that is something that God is upset about or frustrated with. And so I'm great with that. I'm also great with a more casual dress. We are a casual atmosphere. And part of that is growing up in the church. I grew up going to church where people wore suits all the time. And then I got involved in church and got in church staff. And what I saw is the same people that dressed really nice had a bunch of issues behind the scenes. And I never knew they did. I just thought everyone was perfect because they always looked perfect. And so I would rather us come as we are and try to be as authentic as we are and just say, hey, this is me, and understand that God is going to give us grace and that he's not hung up as much on what we wear as he is on our hearts. And so, but at the end of the day, if it's a conviction, then, I would say find a compromise and support your right. your spouse in that. Right? Anything to add? Cool. How do you guys keep things fresh and new, i.e. clever date night ideas? I didn't know where you were going with that. thanks for the parentheses. Clever date night ideas. You want to take a stab at that?
I mean, we both follow a lot of pop culture and social media, so we get a lot of ideas from that and just see what friends are doing and what trends are on TikTok. I know he's on there a little bit more than me, but we see what others are doing. We just say, that looks fun, let's do that. We've always loved going on small trips and adventures together. So even if they're just small local things, we just try to be intentional with our time. And so those small things make a difference. But if I see something, I suggest it, and we might say no, and that's okay. Sometimes we try it, and he posts it, and it goes viral, and my high schoolers come up to me in the halls and talk to me about it, and it's a reminder that I work with high schoolers, and they're going to see everything we do. But that's also really fun. That's where I think we get most of our ideas, are friends and social media, but also just being intentional and knowing what works for us and what we see some people do. Like, we're not going to go camp and hike because that doesn't work for him. But that works for our friends. I mean, it doesn't work for me in this season either, to be fair. But I mean, I think you just have to find what works for you and maximize on that and be intentional. But I think social media, and he's really creative too. And I think we like to have fun together and as a family. And again, just being intentional in small moments and maximizing our time together.
Yeah, I'll give you a couple creative ideas that we've done throughout the years. And this one actually was one Monica came up with. And it was great for a season. She took a mason jar, and then we brainstormed and wrote various ideas on popsicle sticks. And so we both wrote restaurants. We both wrote activities that we like to do. We both wrote a bunch of things, and we put it in the jar. And whenever we are on one of those nights, which I'm sure you have nights like this where it's like the kids aren't there, and you're like, what do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? And it's like we can't figure it out. We'd go to the jar and pull a popsicle stick, and that would tell us whatever you pull, that's what we do. And it's no like debating it. It's like, okay, we're doing this. And so she also got a date book that was really creative, that you scratch off things for the date and it tells you what to do, and it comes with a little like Polaroid camera that you can take photos of it. I think the main thing is just agreeing on what you guys want in a marriage, and what, like, it's not about just one person doing what they want to do. Just agree. If you both like having fun, then figure out ways. This is your marriage. You get to figure out ways to have fun and do that often, as much as you can. See if we got another question. Do you two have conflict? Nope. Next question. Do you have conflict, and how do you handle it? We do have conflict, and I think that in some ways our personalities work out really, really well together, and then in some ways our personalities don't work out well. And conflict is one of those areas where I don't like conflict at all, and so I will tend to shut down. And Monica also doesn't love conflict, but she is more to like, she'll avoid it and then she can move on. And so, whereas me, I kind of stuff it, and then like 2 days later, I'm still thinking about it. For her, she goes to sleep and wakes up, and it's like, that never happened. She's moved on to the next thing. And so we've had to work at conflict, because it's like, for me, I'm like, well, last night you were bothered by this, and I want to talk about it. And she's like, I'm already moved on. And for me, then it's like 2 days later, I say, hey, this has been bothering me. And she's like, where did this come from? And I thought everything was fine. And so our personalities don't work great, but then they do work great in conflict, because neither one of us are like, neither one of us yell, neither one of us have like massive tempers, and we're pretty laid back with things. And so it's very healthy, but then actually dealing with the conflict is a tricky thing. For me, I'll let you answer. I'll give you a chance. For me, the biggest thing for handling conflict is not handling it in the moment of conflict. Because I have a hard time processing what is actually going on. And then I've found when I bring something to Monica, her personality type is the type that will get more defensive. And so when I say, hey, this hurt my feelings, her defenses will go up. And so I have found that we do a lot better when I can just wait 24 hours and then bring it to her and say, hey, listen, this isn't level 10, but I was feeling this, and I want to have a conversation about it, and this is what I was feeling. And she receives the conflict a lot better in that moment than in, like, when the frustration is high.
I can definitely be defensive initially. I can also be sarcastic, but I do...
No.
Never. Probably as an avoidance tactic, too. I think the positives are we are not yellers, and our conflict is minimal, I think, and it usually stems around being tired or hungry or high-stress moments. It's not super common. I hope our kids can look back and see that it was a low-stress, low-conflict environment, but I'm dramatic but not emotional. Do you agree with that?
Yes.
So I can't, the next day I'm like, it's fine. It's already passed. Let's just keep moving on. I'm very task driven. So let's just get on to the next thing. And then when we do sit down to talk about it, I end up feeling weepy because I've disappointed him or I've let him down, and I never want to do that because I'm a perfectionist. So we end up like having, I feel bigger emotions, not because of that specific event, but just because of bigger emotions, deeper emotions. And my daughter's inherited this. I don't like to have emotions. Like, I try not to deal with them because it's just easier. So that's sort of all over the place, but it's not very often. I think very early on we established the rules Rob's talked about with conflict. We don't use always and never. We don't name call.
We stay on topic. We don't bring up the past. Mm-hmm. If there's an issue, there's a whole bunch of rules that we have established. Not a whole bunch, but there's like five or six rules that we've established that help us in conflict. And typically when someone gets in conflict, if there are no rules, then they end up going all over the place. And so when you bring up a conflict, some things that people love to do that are bad habits is you bring up a conflict and, hey, we need to talk about this. And then the other person says, well, let me tell you what you did last week. And it's like, okay, now we've changed subjects. And that's an unfair fighting tactic. And so we have worked really hard at not saying absolutes. We don't name call. We stay on topic. We're not going to bring up the past. It's like, hey, this is the issue. Let's deal with it. And let's talk through it. The last conflict that we had, and this is, to me, most conflicts are not just one person. It takes two to be in conflict. And I am a very direct but kind person. And I want people to be direct but kind to me. I assume if you say something to me, that's what you mean. And so I really don't like when someone's like, I'm doing okay. Because I'm like, I don't know what that means. Like, that's not direct. Like, what is okay? Like, and so I'll ask follow-up questions. And so sometimes it's very annoying to be married to me because I'm like, well, what did you mean by that? Tell me what it is. Monica can be direct, but sometimes in her directness, I'm too sensitive to handle it. And so she's like, I thought you wanted me to be direct. I'm like, yeah, but kind, like be kind. Like that hurt my feelings. It is tough, like just dealing with any human being, you're gonna have these differences. And so our last conflict was a couple months ago where I felt like Monica was saying to me that she wants me to be more assertive. And typically when we make decisions, if I have an opinion, I'll share it. But my general temperament is, I just want you to be happy. And so when she's like, what do you...
It's great. It's a lovely habit.
So when she's like, where do you want to eat? I'm like, I will find something I like anywhere. I really want to go wherever you want. And to that bothers her because she's like, I just want to know what you're thinking and what you want. I want you to be assertive. So a couple months ago, she was like, we were juggling a whole bunch of things and we had to get dinner taken care of. And she said, what do you want to do for dinner? And I told her, and I was like, I was proud of myself. I was assertive. And she's like, oh, I don't want to do that. You should just go do. And I'm like, what? Like, she was in one location. I had to get dinner for the kids and I had to get dinner for myself. And I thought through it. And I was like, I'm just going to go one place. I'm going to get dinner for all of us. And then I'll deliver it to all the places. And she was like, she didn't want that. And so while I'm running then to three different places, I'm frustrated. Because I'm like, I don't understand the rules that we're playing by. She tells me to be assertive. And I'm assertive. And she changes the rules. And so by the time I see her and I drop off the food, I'm grumpy. And I'm frustrated. And she's like, what is wrong with you? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I... the next day, that's when we talked, and I said, hey, I just want to revisit this, and I know that you could tell that I was grumpy, but here's what was going on in my mind. What I continue to hear is that you want me to be more assertive, and when I try to be assertive, then you don't receive that very well, and that sends mixed messages to me, and so I'm fine with not being assertive with picking dinner, but you need to be fine with me not being assertive. If you want me to be assertive, you also have to receive that when I am. And she received it, and we, I think.
It was very confusing. I usually want Taco Bell. I didn't want Taco Bell that night.
That's true. It's true, she didn't.
That's our wild conflict, guys.
Yeah. This is fun. All right. I think we have time for a couple more. How do you handle each other's quirks that you may not love?
Rob has been a snorer since day one. And he got a CPAP machine, but he used to always tell me that it was his love songs to me while he slept. And so that's how we handled that quirk. Yeah, I'd be like, he's singing his love song to me. Thank God. And you have to reframe those things. Like, thank God I have someone beside me snoring. Like, not everyone gets that, right? Like, or someone has lost that. Like, you just have to put things in perspective for those silly things. Like, there are actual, like, he can't control that, right? But there are real things, too. But those are some, that's a silly one.
Yeah. A prayer that I pray on almost a daily basis is, God, help me to love Monica the way that you love the church. And it's what Paul told husbands to do. Love your wife like Christ loved the church. And the reason that I pray that is more so, not because Monica is difficult, it's because I'm difficult and I need to show more grace. And so what I've found is that when I pray, God, help me to love Monica the way that you love the church, her quirks don't bother me as much. Because most of the time, her quirks, it's more of a me thing than it is her. Now, if it is something that is literally impacting us, you know, then we'll have a conversation about it and we'll talk through it. But most of the time, quirks are, I mean, it's little tiny things. Like, you know, her mind works so fast and she's on to the next thing that when she goes through the kitchen, she'll just leave, like, drawers open.
And I'm coming back to it.
And so I would just point that out all the time. And it's like that's annoying. Like, just let it be. Like, who cares if a drawer is open? That's not that big of a deal. So either I'll close it or I'll just leave it open. And I try my best just to be quiet, because, like, it's not, in the grand scheme of things, that's not a big deal. Like, who cares? Like, it's not like the world's going to fall apart because a cabinet drawer was left open. And so I try to pray that prayer often. God, help me to love Monica the way that you love the church. And that means accepting these quirks, accepting the things that she cannot change, and showing her grace for the things that she can change. And same, hopefully she feels the same way about me as well. All right. How can you encourage older children to turn back to Christ? This is one that I would need some more information, because I don't know what older children mean. When I see the word children, I am thinking like older, like 16, 17, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, somewhere around there. If the question is, you know, it's a 28-year-old, then my answer would change some. My answer that I share anytime a question comes up like this that is unpopular with some people, but I'm just convinced of it, that when a kid lives in your home, church and God is not optional. And you don't have to be a jerk about it. You don't have to, like, you don't have to shame them, but it's like, this is, I'm sorry that you don't like it. I'm sorry you don't want to go, but this is a part of our family. And what is confusing to me is that church is so optional for so many parents when their kid says, I don't want to go to church, but yet when their kid says, I don't want to go to the doctor, we don't say, oh, okay, that's okay. You got a disease, you'll deal with it. When a kid says, I don't want to go to school, parents don't say, okay, well, you just drop out. Little Timmy, 6 years old, drop out. Like, you don't want to go, like, it's optional. So we've prioritized certain things to where we don't allow our kids to dictate what they do. There's certain things where we just say, hey, tough luck. I am sorry that you don't want to go, I get it, but you have to do this. We show some tough love with those things, but then with church, for a lot, as soon as a kid says, I don't want to go, we're like, okay, don't go, or we're not going to force you to go. And the thought process is, we don't want to force them to go because we don't want them to grow up hating going to church. And what I would just challenge, and I would just ask, is I don't know very many people who grew up going to church and we're in a healthy church, that in their later years were like, you know what? I hate that my parents dragged me to church. I know a bunch of people who are like, I'm so thankful that my parents dragged me to church every week, and I'm so thankful that church was a priority in our family. And I'm thankful for that. And so kids change just like adults change. They have temperaments. Sometimes they want to do things, or sometimes they don't. For our family, It's just these things are not optional. So that would be the first thing. The second part of this is how do you encourage older children to turn back to Christ? I think the key thing that you have to do is be praying for them, because you can do your part and you can be as consistent as possible, but you cannot change a heart. Only God can do that. And so you pray all the time and are just constantly praying. And then you're modeling for them and you're showing them lots of grace and patience, and you're showing them why it's important to you. And then with God's help, I think you can turn the corner. The scriptures say that if you raise a kid in the way that they should go, even if they turn from it, they'll come back. And so that's what I hold on to, that if one day, hopefully my kids don't rebel, but if one day they do, I'm going to hold on to, okay, they're going to come back. They have a foundation. They know what's important, and we're going to pray that they come back.
Yeah, I beg God multiple times a day just to capture Reese and Hayden's hearts, and that's all I can do. I can't make them love God or serve God. Only He can. I can't change their hearts. Only God can. But I can establish those disciplines now of attending, of serving, of giving, and hope that that foundation lasts. I know that I'm going to fail them. I have, and I will continue to, but that God won't, and that when they need Him, they can look back and know that He's been faithful to us and to them, and that eventually, if it comes to this for them, that they can look back and know that He has been faithful. And so for me, it's prayer, and I think we talked about this in the car yesterday, just thinking about Rob's mom, Marcia, and just how much she's prayed over our families and her three children. Like, what a gift to have three grown children loving Jesus and in the church and serving the Lord. For Bob and Marcia, I feel like we'd be like, gosh, that's what I want. Like, I want both our kids as grown-ups with their families serving Jesus and worshiping God. But I can't control that. I can't make them do that once they leave our house. Like, that's the desire of my heart. Like, besides our marriage pointing others to Jesus, I just hope and pray that our kids can find salvation and peace and hope in Him, just like we have as well.
Yeah. All right, let's try to get through another one. See if we can. How do you deal with one of you having peace in a situation while the other definitely does not?
We had to buy a new car this week, and I looked at him, and I was like, I know you want a new car today, but I'm just going to need you to give me a minute if I'm not ready. I'm going to trust you because you're usually wiser and smarter, but I might not be ready. It was probably emotional ties to the old van, but I didn't feel the urgency, probably because of the emotional ties. I don't know, but you just have to communicate what you're feeling on the front end and what you need on the front end. I'm an avid reader. I blow through fiction books multiple a week, and it said in this, it was like a rom-com or something, like, when you take your car to the mechanic, you tell them what's wrong when you get there. You don't make them guess. You don't say, it's probably my transmission, when you know it's the brakes. Like, you tell them what's wrong so they can look at that. And they might find something else too, but like, you tell them what's wrong up front so the issue can be dealt with. Like, and when we are dealing with something, struggling through something, and one of us has peace and one of us doesn't, like, we have to put our feelings up front, our concerns up front, so that we know how to pray for one another, so that everything's on the table, or else, I always misquote it, but I love it, like, we're taking a test. We don't, what's your quote?
Don't give people a test they don't know they're taking.
Yeah, that. Like, it's a, why set each other up to fail? Like, I don't want him guessing. He says all the time, like, we can't read each other's mind. So, like, you have to just put it all out there so we don't have to deal with each other. Like, we want to support each other and pray for each other. So just communication is just huge. And just praying and having that submission competition that he's talked about in this series. And just that's where trust comes in a relationship too. Like, he's trusted me as I've quit jobs and started new careers lately. I've trusted him as we've sold our house and moved in with his parents to start a church. Like, you just there's that back and forth as you submit to one another, and it's not always both of you having full peace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I would add to that, I think empathy goes a long way, and showing them that you understand, or you're trying to understand. And just because you're not worried about it, if they're worried about it, part of the job of mutual submission is showing, okay, I'm here to support you, and I'll be your rock during this season, and I want to pray for you, and that sounds tough, or that's difficult. And showing them empathy, I think, can go a long way. And then I also think prayer is a massive component to this, that when they share something to you, pray for them, pray with them, and ask God to work in this situation, and it seems to bring a lot of peace in those circumstances. But this is one that's tough because neither one of our personalities, we both have worries, we both have concerns, but neither one of our personalities has like long-lasting anxiety or things that we're just worried about. Typically when we talk about it, when we process it, then it's like, okay, that's the next move, let's do this or let's move on. And so this is where our personalities may play a part, but I definitely think prayer is a big part, and I think empathy is a massive part of showing the other person, okay, I hear you, that sounds tough, like, I want to love you through this, I want to care about you, and I understand that you're scared. What doesn't help is when you say, just stop worrying about that, or that doesn't matter, I don't understand why you're so concerned about that, it's not a big deal. What is a big deal to them? And so showing them empathy, I think, goes a long way. Well, thank you so much for being here. Will you help me thank Monica for being here? I want to pray for us, and then the band will come up, and we'll do a little bit more worship. Let's pray. God, thank you so much for today. Thanks for a chance to be candid. Thanks for a chance to share and talk about marriage and family. Thank you for Monica for her time today, and we're just so grateful that you give us opportunities to share what you're doing in our lives. We're so thankful for our church. Thank you for our staff. We just give you the rest of the service. In Jesus' name, amen.
We hope you've enjoyed and learned from today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us further, you can check out our website, nextlevelchurch.net, or find us on Facebook or Twitter.